Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, and this is episode number 89. We are continuing our 2019 offensive projection series with Dwayne McFarland. Dwayne, welcome back to the show. It's great having you aboard.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Each week, Matt, you know, we're getting closer to football season being here. We now have a week of preseason behind us. I'm excited.
Yeah, so am I. And so I figured it would be time, as we've been making our way around the NFL. We've done probably close to 20 teams at this point. You can find it at mattwaldmanrsp.com. You can find a page that lists all of the projection series that we've done on the RSP cast, and they are available according to most recent date to least recent date. You just got to find that page. I'll give you a little hint. You'll see an excerpt, a photo of Young Frankenstein, a scene from Young Frankenstein on that says RSP projection series with Dwayne McFarland. And you can look there and find that. We're going to work on Atlanta today. That's who we're going to lead off with, the Atlanta Falcons. And, you know, this is my hometown team. That's not really my, I'm not a fan of them, but I've been covering them for Football Guys for many years. And this is a team that certainly they added some weaponry with Calvin Ridley last year, but they've undergone a transition where they, you know, they had Kyle Shanahan for a couple of years and that was working out great. And then they tried to do a placeholder with Steve Sarkisian. Couldn't quite give it the nuance that the offense needed from a play-calling perspective, as well as when he tried to add his own spin to it, it just kind of sloshed in a way that it shouldn't have. And so when you look at it from that standpoint, now they're going back to Dirk Koetter, who was a part of this as the offensive coordinator before he moved over to the Bucs. And so we're going to have some interesting discussion about what we think Dirk Koetter brings to this team, you know, whether or not Matt Ryan and this passing offense can really – you know, continue to play at the level that it has. And then about this running game, now that it's no longer the Freeman, Tevin Coleman show, could it be a 1-2 punch, or is it really a one man wrecking crew this year? So Dwayne, you know, what are your initial thoughts about this team?
Well, my initial thoughts are we should have had something like the Welcome Back Koetter song somehow teed up, you know, with Koetter coming back, you know, after, you know, like you said, spending time in Tampa. You know, I'm excited just because I, you know, the offense was solid last year, but, you know, you could tell that even through comments, you know, through the players in the media, and it wasn't, you know, just at any just one specific time. It was pretty much, you know, throughout the season that there just wasn't, I don't think there was, they just didn't mesh well, I don't think, with Sarkisian. So I'm excited, you know, from that perspective to see someone else, you know, here. Now, whether or not Dirk Koetter is going to be the answer to everything, you know, I don't know. We can talk, you know, a little bit more about him here in just a second, you know, but if you just zoom out at Atlanta and you look at where they are, you know, their margin of victory was only a minus 0.6. So last year, even though they struggled some, you know, they were very close, you know, to being, you know, a better team than they are. And so now they go into this offseason and they use two first round picks. Now, there's a lot of debate around whether either of these two first round picks were worth first round picks. But Right. They did spend two first round picks on offensive linemen. So you get Caleb McGarry and then you get Chris Lindstrom. They also added guards Jamon Brown and James Carpenter. So they realized that offensive line is something that, you know, they needed to address. And they did spend, you know, some draft capital as well as, you know, some free agency dollars on doing that. So I'm interested in seeing, you know, what that does for the team, because that's something that when Kyle Shanahan was there in the year that the team exploded, you know, the line was healthy and they were getting really good play from the offensive line. So I think that's a big key for the Falcons this year. If you look at what Vegas thinks about the Falcons right now, they've got them right at 8.5 wins, which, you know, if you look at the margin of victory from last year, that's basically, you know, if a team's at zero, you know, they technically should come out at 8-8. Right. And so they've got Atlanta just slightly above that right now. When I look at the weapons that are around Matt Ryan, like you said, I'm very excited about the second year with Calvin Ridley. Obviously, we have Julio Jones. We've got Austin Hooper going into his, is this Austin Hooper's third or fourth year, Matt?
I think this is might be his year.
Yeah, I think it is his fourth year. So Hooper is a guy that I was actually, when he first came into the league, pretty excited about, to be honest. And I loved where he had landed with Kyle Shanahan, right, in the offense that he was originally a part of, you know, which uses the tight end quite a bit. So it will be interesting to see, you know, what Dirk Koetter does. So if you think about, you know, what Koetter has done and, you know, what he's like to do, you know, as far as being a coach, last year he really handed over the reins more to Todd Monken. So last year was really, I'm just looking back right now, you know, Matt, at the history of, you know, Dirk Koetter's offenses. And what I really see, you know, as far as quarterback play goes and the way that he sets up his scheme, it seems to be, you know, something that he does tailor to his quarterback. So if you look at his time in Tampa, the average depth of target, 11, 10.6, 10.7, 10.3. Those are all years with Jameis Winston paired with a player like Mike Evans. So that shows me, you know, that he is setting up the scheme to play to the player's scheme, to the player's strengths. If you look at that before, going back to Atlanta 2014, Atlanta 2013 and 12, so all with Matt Ryan, 8 yards, 7 yards, 8.5 yards. Before that in Jacksonville, 8 yards, 9 yards, 9 yards. So I think we'll probably see something fairly similar to what we saw with Matt Ryan before with Dirk Koetter, is what my gut, you know, says. You know, if you look back at the way that offense was ran at the time, and if you remember, there was a year that was really good in which he had Roddy White and Julio Jones together, as Julio Jones was starting to reach his apex and Roddy White still, you know, was a capable wide receiver before it completely fell off. There was he targeted his wide receiver 68% of the time. You know, he had never done that before. Now, last year in Tampa Bay, it was 65%. Sorry, that's the reception rate. The target rate was 66%. And then last year with Tampa, it was 65%. So I think you're going to probably see something, you know, kind of similar to that, maybe a little bit lower, because they do have Hooper, and Devontae Freeman is also a very capable back out of the backfield. If you look back in his time with Atlanta before, with Matt Ryan, 22%, 26%, 24%, 25% of the receptions were going to the running backs. So he is a guy that's willing to use the runners. But I think my biggest takeaway when I was looking at him, you know, and writing notes, you know, back in May around this offense, he seems to be someone, Matt, that's pretty flexible as far as the way he's A, going to allow his or the scheme he's going to set up for his quarterback, A, and then B, the way he's going to distribute the ball. I think when you look at Atlanta, it could be, I think Julio Jones is the clear one, and we'll get more into those details in a minute, but I think it's going to be a pretty evenly distributed offense. I think Calvin Ridley's going to get his. I think, you know, Austin Hooper's going to be involved still. I think Mohamed Sanu will still be involved. And then I think Freeman's going to be targeted out of the backfield. And I think Matt Ryan's a great fit for running that kind of offense where it's basically like just find the open guy and get it to him.
I agree. And I think that's a perfect way of looking at it, because when you look at Dirk Koetter in the past, when he's had a feature back, he's used the feature back. That's, you know, Maurice Jones-Drew during his career, and when Maurice Jones-Drew was really a viable running back one for a number of years. He also did that, you know, when Doug Martin was healthy and playing at the level Doug Martin can play at. He rode Doug Martin to a top three finish in fantasy, you know, a few years back. But when he hasn't had that, you know, he will distribute the ball in different ways, because, you know, he had Michael Turner towards the end, just before Michael mm-hmm. Turner really fell off. Then he had Steven Jackson, which was like a valiant attempt to have the Steven Jackson of old, but he couldn't stay healthy. And the offensive line for Atlanta, when Dirk Koetter was in Atlanta, the end of his career in Atlanta was really because for the past 2 to 3 years, that offensive line was horrible. I mean, they were starting guys that were like third string type level yes. players. And Matt Ryan proved his mettle during those years, because he didn't quite have the receivers. He didn't quite have the offensive line. And literally the thing that many people don't remember is that when Atlanta turned it around under Kyle Shanahan, that summer, the offensive line was still bad. And it was so bad that for the first time ever in my years watching Matt Ryan, from his first snap, and I've had to watch him every week, his first snap all the way until that point, it was a Miami game with Ndamukong Suh in the preseason. And Matt Ryan, even in the preseason, was literally just throwing the ball to the ground and like pulling Jeff George-like responses to what was going on with the line, and pretty much turning around and looking at people like,
I can't play like this. I mean, he wasn't saying that, but it sure looked like he could have been communicating something along those lines, like, you got to get me help because this is otherwise, you know, what am I supposed to do here? And I think that they, you know, they made some desperation kind of trades and turned out to be an acquisitions. And, you know, as some NFL, you know, an NFL consultant told me, you know, that, you know, in his years of working with a number of teams, that he had never seen an offensive line turnaround performed in August that actually worked other than Atlanta Falcons. And that what they did was they pulled it out of their hind parts and it worked. And it really helped this team a lot. And part of that is that run game with Devonta Freeman. And I think that, you know, I'd like to start on that this year or this time just to begin rather than the passing game, just because when you look at this team, it's been Devonta Freeman, Tevin Coleman, and Tevin Coleman's been the guy that they use kind of on perimeter plays, get him in space, outside zone types of runs. Occasional, you know, a lot of routes into the flat, and then occasionally they'll use him and Freeman in the backfield to generate some of that, those targets, so that teams have to key on Freeman a little bit and get Coleman into space. And then they'd use him in the red zone occasionally, what they would, or frequently enough that, but in a way that it was kind of like, you knew Freeman was getting it inside the five. So you have the red zone and the green zone. The red zone's inside the 20, the green zone's inside the five. The red zone, you'd see Coleman get used there to see if they can break him out in the space and outrun people. And he'd often do pretty good there. And if you got inside the 10, they'd give it to him there too. But inside the five, more often than not, from what I remember, Devonta Freeman was really the guy when he's healthy. This year, we've got Freeman, Ito Smith, and a lot of people are talking up Ito Smith, especially in fantasy circles, like, don't forget about him. He flashed last year. And, you know, that's nice. But when I've watched the Falcons this preseason and I studied this, you know, Miami game, and also watching, you know, doing the training camp reports for football guys, one of the things that I've noticed is all year, pretty much everyone from the owner to the GM to the coach has said, Devonta Freeman is pivotal to our success. He's the guy we're riding in the run game. And then in addition to that, you know, we're going to have more of a rotation of the backs behind a Devonta Freeman than what we've had before. And when you look at the preseason right now, Brian Hill is a guy that you need to be paying attention to because he had a good stretch run last year when they used him against Carolina. He had a 100-yard game. He's a physical runner who they originally drafted. Then they cut. He ended up in Cincinnati. He got cut there too, came back to Atlanta and has improved as a receiver, has gotten a little bit better on certain concepts of running where he ran a lot more gap at Wyoming. He's running more zone and he's doing a good job of that. But he's the most physical back on this roster in terms of combination of physicality, vision, and being able to accelerate through his cuts. So Ito Smith has good acceleration and he has good wiggle and he can run the zone scheme pretty well, but Hill's a little bit more of a complete player. And if Freeman gets hurt, I wouldn't be surprised if Hill is the guy where Smith just retains the same role that he'll have. You know, it'll be a steady role of being kind of a change of pace scat back. But even then, if he falters even just a little bit, Kenyon Barner, who's a good special teams guy, also has that third down and pass catching skill, and they've used him in the 2-minute drill often enough that I think what you're seeing here is that you're not going to have like a 1-2 punch this year. You're just going to have the player and the backups, and if they need to call on the backups on any consistent amount, Smith is just going to be more of a scat back, like a Jaquizz Rodgers to in committee mode, to a Brian Hill who might play more of a Peyton Barber type of guy, or a Doug Martin not completely being, you know, given the starting duties type of thing. And Barner might come in occasionally as your Charles Sims type of option. And let's not even forget Kadri Allison, because if he continues to play well, that could complicate who actually earns, you know, gets an active spot on the depth chart, because Allison's played well too.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. You hit on several things that I'll touch on real quick. One, you know, was thinking about Dirk Cotter's utilization, right, of running backs in the past. So if you look, to your point, back to the time in Jacksonville when he had Maurice Jones-Drew. So on an attempts per game share, so I've adjusted all of these for, you know, basically just to include the games that a player played and then what percentage of the carries did they get. So for his running back one, 70%, 67%, 70%. So those are your Maurice Jones-Drew years. He arrives in Atlanta, and that's, you know, you covered, you know, sorry, Matt, why is my mom going blank? The running back that was there, the Illinois guy.
Turner.
Yeah. Turner. 50, yeah. Turner. Burner. Yeah. 59%, yeah. 65%. Right. And then he ran into a year where, you know, they had issues with injury, et cetera, et cetera. It dropped down to 54%. But then in Tampa Bay, you, just like you mentioned with Doug Martin, you had a 63% and a 64%. So I think you can look for, you know, Freeman, you know, to be the guy. Like you said, everything I'm hearing from camp, I watched every snap with the starters and then watched a little bit more through last week. Now, Matt Ryan didn't play. Some of the other guys didn't play. But as far as the running backs went, Ito Smith got the start, but Brian Hill worked in on the same, you know, Devonta Freeman didn't play, obviously, but Brian Hill worked in on that same drive. So I agree with you. And that kind of matches up with what we're hearing, that it may not necessarily be a pecking order of one, two, three. It might be one, and both of these guys are really, you know, the two, but there's a big gap between the one versus what we can expect from those other guys. And so I think when you start pairing all this information together, and you really laid it out well, Cotter's history. Also, let's think about what, you know, the Falcons, you know, have in Devonta Freeman. You know, he's a good running back. You know, he's still in a decent sized contract that they gave to him. They may have some concern about trying to keep him fresh just because he has battled some things, but it's not like the injuries that he had last year or something that we have to be worried about into this year. The thing, honestly, that scares me the most with Freeman is he has had a little bit of a hiccup, like with concussions, and he's an aggressive runner.
Right.
You know, I mean, he gets his head down, mm-hmm. he gets low. I mean, and he will, you know, he explodes into impact. And so I think he's probably got, you know, some risk for something like that occurring. But overall, to your point, I think he's clearly, you know, going to be the guy here in this backfield. And if you think about Freeman, what I love about him, Matt, and again, you know, so we just, you know, Mark Schofield and I just did a thing on Derek Carr from one of our last episodes that, you know, kind of spawned that idea about data and film coming together. You know, if you think about Freeman and some of the data and the things that I look at, what's interesting about him, you know, is despite not having like super elite top speed and some of the things that people were concerned about, you know, coming out of college, I think you even just put out something around evaluation process and, you know, what was it around Freeman that maybe you wish you would have evaluated differently or what may change your mind. But what I find interesting about him is every year that he's in the league, Matt, I mean, his breakaway carry percentage is over six. You know, the league average is right at a four to a five, you know. I mean, so he's consistently over that and he finds ways to make big runs. Now he doesn't, what's funny is his breakaway yardage percent won't be like up at 50% like some guys, you know, which, you know, they have these huge years. He still hasn't had one of those. So he's still got, he's potentially got a year in the tank where things are going to break right for him like that when he's still healthy. And if all of a sudden he has that kind of year where, you know, two of his normal 15 yard breakaways turn into 60 yarders based on where they are on the field. You know, this is a guy that really could surprise people this year. So if fantasy players are listening, I mean, Devonta Freeman has a reasonable upside if healthy that I wouldn't be floored if we looked up at the end of the year and we're like, wow, Devonta Freeman was the eighth best runner in fantasy. I wouldn't be surprised at all. And, you know, for fantasy players, he's going in the third round and he should absolutely be part of their draft plans.
Yeah, I'm counting on that actually as part of a draft strategy. I'm literally saying, kind of joking around, and I shared something with you this afternoon, kind of joking around that, you know, we have a number of great writers on staff at Football Guys, and David Dodds is certainly one of the kings of that. He's had his perfect draft articles for years. And, you know, Football Guys is very well known for their Rate My Team app. And I like to joke around with the writers because it's like David's part of that Rate My Team kind of mentality. And he gives you the way to kind of have a good rating on the Rate My Team so that you can have a very strong team that manages you know, that manages risk well, and that you can have a number of different avenues of how to build it and maintain it and manage it through the season. And I play more higher risk, high reward with what I do. So I've kind of joked that, you know, if David Dodds is kind of like the Betty Crocker of, you know, his perfect draft is the Betty Crocker article, you know, then I, you know, I'm going to be, you know, I've rate my team basically telling me that I'm not worthwhile as a fantasy owner pretty much every year, but I somehow end up playing Betty Crocker in the championship, and I'm armed with knives and she's armed with a spatula. So it's kind of, you know, and so one of my knives this year is Devonta Freeman, and, you know, hopefully the knife doesn't break off or get too dulled. So that I'm faced off with, you know, getting beaten by a baking pan, you know, over the head. But the real thing with Devonta Freeman for me is I don't know if he'll ever have that breakaway that you talked about, because he is a slower back in terms of top speed. And a lot of the ways that he does it is because he changes direction so well initially. And then when he has to start he gains a lot of those big runs because he makes good second and third cuts. And once you do that, you still have to slow down and reaccelerate, and that causes people to be able to catch up to you. But that's one of the things that makes him so great too, is that he is, to me, one of the most creative and decisive runners. Like he has that combination or balance of those two characteristics that a few runners do. Like Saquon Barkley is one of the most creative runners that you're going to find, you know, but very rarely do you have a guy who sees things ahead of time and hits them so decisively and makes higher risk type of looking cuts that Freeman does. And I'm not talking about athletic looking. I'm talking more like bouncing a play outside in Carolina and you have Mohamed Sanu blocking for you, and you split Sanu and the guy he's blocking and literally duck between them and not get touched. Like, you don't see many runners do that. And if they encounter themselves in a situation like that, they end up slowing down and running into one of those players. And Freeman just has a knack for that. So I've got Freeman at about 240 attempts. And I have him at 1,141 yards, about 4.75 yards of a, you know, per carry, 4.75 yards per carry. I have him at 11 touchdowns because I think he's going to get most of the red zone work. And then I have him at 65 targets, 49 catches, 400 yards for 2 touchdowns. So I have him looking at well into double digit touchdowns total. And we're looking at him getting close to at about a 1,500 yard season total yards.
Yeah, we're close. I'll zoom out real quick because I know one of the things people like on these that we get a lot of good feedback on is like the overall team view. So for Atlanta,
yeah, please.
The other thing to remember with the impact of Cotter, and I should have mentioned this a minute ago. If you look at his last, this 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 seasons, here are his pass attempt percentages versus run: 62, 61, 56, 54, 63, 67, and 62. Now, he hasn't been part of very many winning teams, but that last one, the 13 wins, that was the 62% pass, right? If you look at his early years in Tampa, he was trying to protect a young quarterback, right? You know, so he was at 56 right. And at 54. In that second year, they won 9 games. That's the most, you know, that he ever won in his tenure as a head coach from the time he was with Tampa. It was his first year coaching the team. So I anticipate given the roster construction here, the fact that they've got Julio Jones, who's probably about to get another big contract. You've got Calvin Ridley, who you spent a first round pick on. You have a solid player in Sanu and another solid player in Hooper. And oh, by the way, like we already talked about, one of Freeman's solid assets is his ability as a pass catcher. I think we're going to see a lot of passing. So I've got this team right now at 59% pass, 41% run. I have them at 975 attempts. So that comes out to 575 pass plays. That's one of the higher projections I have. It's not in the top 3 or 4, but it's right outside of that. And then for runs, I have them at 400. So I think that's the other way they're going to protect Devonta Freeman. They're just not going to run the ball a ton. You know, this is going to be a team that's going to pass the ball more often than not. They're also in a division which can force your hand at that. I mean, Carolina, you know, is a team that could, you know, win 7 games this year, but they could also win 9 or 10. You know, we talked about them last episode. you're going to have to deal with the New Orleans Saints, who are always going to be good. And now the Bucs are going to be better under Bruce Arians. So this is going to be a team that's going to be in some competitive games. And I expect them to play to their strengths. And then I expect GameScript to also keep them up towards that 60% of their attempts being passed. Now, to the runners, what that means for Freeman, it's funny, Matt. It really is funny, you know, how you nail some of these, you know, even though our processes, you know, are different, you know, and mine is constructed, you know, mine is constructed from starting with the whole of the offense. You know, I think there's some where you're, you know, we've been much further off, but like on this one, we're very close. I gave Devonta Freeman 60%. So I laid out what the percentages have been with Cotter. I gave him 60% of the carries. That puts him right at 240 attempts. I gave him 4.5 yards per carry, I like the player. You know, the offensive line's going to be a little bit better. The fact that they're going to be passing a lot. So I've got him at almost 1,100 yards. I've got him at 8 rushing touchdowns. So like most weeks, Matt, I'm lower than you on rushing touchdowns.
Matt, right.
You're going to have the league record broken in rushing touchdowns. It's because running backs matter, Matt. I know what you're doing.
That's right. I'm just thumbing my nose at all these people.
But I've got him. I've also got him at 69 targets. I've got him at 55 receptions, 470 yards receiving, and I've got him at 1.5 receiving touchdowns. So, Mike, I've got him at 8.5 rushing. So I've got him at 10 total touchdowns. And then I've got him at 1,200. I've got him at almost 1,600 total yards. So he's a, you know, if fantasy players are listening to this, he's a guy that's in my third round draft plan. You know, I almost have to force myself to go away from him every once in a while just to diversify a little bit. But I love him. And he's a guy, Matt, it's funny. I'm willing to take him anywhere. I'll take him, you know, at 3-1, and I've gotten him at 3-10. You know, I've gotten him in the fourth round a couple of times. You know, in the expert league draft I did for football guys, he was my third round pick in that draft with like Mike Taglier, Graham Barfield, all those guys. I started 3 runners in that draft. You know, yeah. I went Kamara, Chubb, and I came right back with Freeman. So I'm like you. I'm super excited about what he can bring. I'm similar to you on the splits. With all the recent news, I broke it up between Ito Smith and Brian Hill. I have Kadri Allison right now sitting on the outside looking in, but it's something to keep monitoring. So I've got Ito Smith at 20% of the work, and I've got Brian Hill at 15% of the work. I do agree with you. I think if something happens to Freeman, I think we're more likely to see Brian Hill get a bigger portion of the carries. I think Ito Smith may work in some more as a pass receiver, but I would expect Brian Hill to probably, at least from what I've heard so far and what I've seen, I think he might be the more true. If somebody's just trying to pick a handcuff for Freeman, I think right now it's a dicey proposition. So I wouldn't, if I don't own Freeman, I'm not trying to do this. But if you do own Freeman, I want your thoughts on this. My thought, the way I'm leaning right now, is that Hill may actually be more of the handcuff if you're thinking injury.
Yeah, I think he is too. And a good clue about that has been two things. One is that it seems like every week, and then every month leading up to training camp, and then every week of training camp, Dan Quinn has remarked about how much Brian Hill has improved and that it's translating to games. That's when coaches say it's translating to games, that's the point. That's their remark to basically say, you should be paying attention to this guy. Because Sanjay Lal was on a local Dallas station, the wide receiver coach for the Cowboys, and I put that on our RSB site, the interview, and he talked about how do you tell which guy, how do you evaluate these young receivers? And he said, we watch them in practice, and the young guys normally in practice, you'll see them make a great play one moment and then mess something up conceptually the next. And so a lot of times people who are watching that, they'll see the great catch and think he had a good practice, but he didn't know his line split. He didn't run a route on time. He didn't do certain things that, say, Jay Moyer and I have talked about a good bit on some previous podcasts. But he said, when we watch the games and we get to study the tape and see how these guys perform, if the consistency, the assignment soundness, the problem solving all comes into play in under the lights, then that gives them the edge. That's what we're looking for. And Brian Hill, when you watch the split in Miami with him and Ito Smith,
They both got pass protection reps and they both performed well with them. They both got receiving opportunities. Brian Hill especially did one where he worked himself open, where he worked from a flat route up the sideline when he saw that his quarterback, Matt Schaub, wasn't going to be able to throw downfield. He worked back up the sideline towards Schaub and caught a ball, you know, set up a first down situation. He's also a guy that was used, you know, he did a more efficient job with his goal line reps. Ito Smith scored, but it took him two times to score on the same type of play, which was a power play, where he didn't do a very good job of setting up his pulling blocker the first time. And then the second time he managed to be a little bit more patient on the rep and he got the touchdown. Hill, you didn't have that problem. And in addition to that is that you watched him consistently break wraps and hits from defensive linemen and linebackers and finish with the advantage after that contact in ways that Ito Smith doesn't normally do. So when you put all of that together, he's had, you know, multiple passing touchdown, receiving touchdowns in the preseason. That's been remarked upon that he's improved as a receiver before those things happened. And you're seeing him rep for rep get the same types of calls. And what's interesting is that we know Ito Smith has burst. So what they were doing on some of those run plays is that with Brian Hill, they know he can run up the middle. So they called toss plays for Brian Hill twice. And each time he got good yardage off of toss plays. And then they ran play action off of those toss plays too. So to me, if I'm a coach and I'm thinking, I'm trying to get a look at what differentiates Brian Hill from Ito Smith. Well, we know Ito's fast, so can Brian execute these perimeter runs the way we'd like to run them with Freeman, with Coleman in the past, and now with Smith? Can Hill do the same thing? And so far the look is, yeah, he can. So I have them right now currently with even amounts, each at 55 attempts, but I have Hill at 257 yards, which is about 4.6 yards a carry, and Ito Smith at 215 yards, which is just under 4 yards a carry, because I didn't like Ito Smith's decision-making last year, and I want to see a little more proof that he can be over the hump. And I have Hill at about 3 touchdowns, rushing touchdowns, Smith at 1. And then when it comes to the receiving game, I'm still favoring Hill, and it's more of an upside projection with 31 targets, 19 catches, 180 yards, and a touchdown. Whereas with Smith, I have him for 9 catches for 82 yards. And the reason is I could see how they fade Ito Smith in ball games if he played like he did down the stretch last year. If he improves, it'll be a different story. But I have Kadri Olison on the out looking in, and I actually have Kenyon Barner second on that reserve list in receptions to, you know, and Ito Smith third, if you're looking at just the backups right now. So I'm kind of fading Smith, liking Hill.
Okay. Yeah, we're really close. I have them basically split, you know, down the middle. So I think it matches, you know, what we've been hearing from the coaches. It matches what we saw in that first preseason game. So I just think, you know, at this point, the evidence, you know, says that, just like the way you started the show, you know, it's going to likely be a split between those guys. And it does, to me as well, sound like Brian Hill is the guy that the coaches, you know, and we could be missing something, but based on the film work you've done and what we're hearing from the coaches, it does seem like they would be leaning towards him. So, so let's talk about, you know, Matt Ryan. Let's talk about, you know, let's set up this, you know, passing game. Right now with Matt Ryan, you know, he's a guy that, you know, we already talked about the attempts. The attempts are going to be there. You know, I've got him at 575 passing attempts. But with Matt Ryan, you know, the thing that's interesting about, you know, him for me, he's one of those guys that for whatever reason, you know, people just always want to overlook. You know, it's just kind of like, oh, Matt Ryan. At least that's the way it seems to me, you know. But the guy is, right. I mean, when you really look at what he's done in his career, I mean, he's had a really good career. You know, he threw 35 touchdowns last year, the year before, you know, was a down year for that team. But the year before that, which was the big Kyle Shanahan year before Kyle moved on to become the 49ers coach and they made it to the Super Bowl, 38 touchdowns and 7 interceptions, you know, 4,944 yards last year, 49, 24, 35 and 7. So, I mean, he's kind of at that point where, you know, his touchdowns per attempt, you know, are in 2 of the last 3 years have been the highest they've been in his career. What's funny is two out of four of the last 4 years, they've been the lowest they've been in his career. Now, I think a lot of that has to do with timing, injuries to Julio Jones, et cetera. You know, but what we see with Matt Ryan, you know, is, and we talked about this with several of the other quarterbacks, you know, if you look at his deep passing, you know, Matt, it's actually better than what most people probably think. You know, his completion percentage is in the top. You know, you don't think of him as being a big armed guy, but he understands what's happening and he seems to anticipate really well. And he makes throws into the windows where he knows his accuracy is still going to be there. You know, so his deep attempt percentage is right around the league average, 12%, 12%, 11.8%. But his completion percentage, you know, over the last several years, and this can be something, you know, deep passing percentages, when you see consistency, and we talked about this with Russell, that's what's amazing about Russell Wilson, is there's not a blip on the radar. Like, literally, it's always elite. But you know, when you look at Matt Ryan, his is actually better than what most people think. You know, 42%, 33% was right at the league average, but before that, a 51, a 41, a 45%. So those are his completion percentages. Yet he never relies heavily on those things for his yardage, which is why I think he's so consistent. Yes, he will hit the big plays and it helps him out, but he doesn't live and die by the big play. You know, it's actually, you know, it helps, but it's not going to kill, you know, his day statistically or his ability to execute if he can't hit that play in a certain game. So he's really consistent there. When you look at him under pressure, you know, last year, 8 touchdowns versus 4 picks. The year before, 4 versus 3, 5 versus 0. This is an area where, honestly, he's really gotten a lot better over the last 3 years. We've seen him really improve. And his yards per attempt don't drop off like many quarterbacks do whenever they're under pressure. Last year was a 7.4. That's above the league average on normal plays. You know, 7.6, you know, 2 years before that, a 7.0. Early in his career, this wasn't something he did. You know, he had a 5.4, a 5.4, a 5.5. So under pressure, he really struggled. And back in the day, he was also quite often throwing more picks than he was touchdowns under pressure, or it would be even. So if you think back, like, to obviously his rookie year, you expect to see that. 2 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Second year, 3 touchdowns, 5. Then he had an outlier, a 10 touchdown to 1 interception year. That kind of thing can happen. But then again, 4 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. 7 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. 8-8. So over these last 3 years, he's really, you know, improved, you know, in that area, because he had always been pretty good when kept clean, Matt. But now he's added that other layer to his game, which makes him much tougher, you know, to play against. You know, if you can play against pressure, and you can also play, you know, whenever there's no pressure, and defenses, because defenses are always looking for, how do we get at this guy? You know, is it better to throw more coverage at him? Is it better to throw more blitzes at him? Is it better to do X, Y, Z? You know, really, for Matt Ryan, he's gotten to the point in his career where he seems to be processing this information really well. So you're going to have to mix it up to really get the guy off of his game. You're going to have to use element of surprise against him. You can't give him things that he's used to seeing. He's just too good for that at this point in his career. As a play action passer, he's improved. You know, he's a strong play action passer. He's good when he gets the ball out quick. And the thing that he's improved, you know, also really well on, Matt, you know, last thing, and I'll give some projections and we can jump into those. If you look early on in his career, you know, he was really solid, you know, with throwing the ball quick. But whenever he would be asked to make a bigger play and hold on to the ball longer, his quarterback rating, most of the stats would all dip. But in the last 3 years, so listen to this. So last year, when holding onto the ball for 2 seconds or longer, and some of this goes with deep passing, 109 rating. I know rating's not the best, easiest way, but a lot of people understand that stat, and it wraps a lot of things together, right? 91, and then the year before, 118. So listen to this, 14 touchdowns and 2 picks, 8 touchdowns and 5 picks, and 14 touchdowns and 2 picks, versus early in his career, you know, a 13 and a 10, a 9 and an 11, an 11 and a 10. So this is a guy that, and some of this goes, I think, does tie into scheme, the scheme change that occurred for him, as well as the weapons around him. But to me, Matt Ryan is really, you know, he's one of these quarterbacks that he, from a data perspective, he fares well across the board.
Can I ask you a question, Dwayne?
Sure.
What's his red zone percentage look like? And can you break it down also, what his red zone work looks like when he has to hold on to the ball longer?
Mm. I'll have to get back to you. I don't have it right in front of me, but I do have that data. I would just have to pull it together. It's something, honestly, I've got a spot here, like where I want to pull more information together around red zone looks because I've actually got some new data there. I don't have it right in front of me. So, but that's obviously, it sounds like it's an area though, where you may have seen, you know, issues. And I think you've even brought some of that up in the past.
Yeah, I'm just curious because I see, and they're isolated plays, you know, but they were, but when you see a couple of isolated looks and you go, wow, what happened on that play? Matt Ryan missed the open man and now went to a second guy and waited and had to throw an incompletion or take a hit, or he threw it out of bounds, or he threw an interception and it was like the first read was right there for him to see and he bypassed it, or he waited too long. And so I've wondered about that. I was surprised to hear about the, I was one of those people surprised to hear about the completion percentage of the deep game, because the, I'm not surprised that it would be near the league average or a little better, but I was surprised that it would be even stronger than that, just because from a form function kind of thing, the functionality has been there, but the form oftentimes when you look at like start exploring like pinpoint accuracy versus, you know, general or area code type accuracy, he's often more area code accuracy on passes that are anywhere longer than, you know, 45 to 50 yards. Like once he gets, he can throw in, I'd say between 35 and 45 yards, he's going to be pinpoint accurate. Once he gets past 45 yards, you can see where that arm strength fails him and it becomes a, far more dependent on the receiver to make the play. So I was pleasantly surprised to hear that with him.
Well, I think to your point on that one, I think one thing, and I don't have it all right in this, another stat I don't have in front of me, but whenever I was studying this, what I did notice, whenever I had data that I could break the buckets down more, he's really good in that second bucket. So I think he understand. I think part of what may, and this is totally, you know, speculation on my part, but this is kind of pairing the dot, you know, taking dots and, you know, following the path to where it may lead you. It would need to be validated with film, but based on what I saw in the data, what it looked like is he had figured that out, that he needed to be more of an anticipation thrower to make deep passes work versus really trying to hit those true 40 yard type bucket throws. It looks like he's learned how to maximize hitting folks in that, you know, 15 to 30 yard range. And he understands that about himself. And he also has the weapons to make that work, I think, because he's got people that can quickly get open that don't have to necessarily just be open downfield. So I think actually, thinking back to what I had seen, and like I said, I don't have it all in front of me, I think it actually fits with what you were probably thinking. I think he's just smart enough that he knows what his weaknesses and what his strengths are, and he's got the talent around him to make it work.
Yeah, and I agree with your overall assessment of Ryan, because he's a very wily player, and he's someone who does just enough things well at various aspects of the position and the way the position can be played that it does pose some difficulties. The best way I think to hurt Matt Ryan's game is one of the most difficult things to do, which is interior pressure. Mm. You have to, if you can consistently get interior pressure from your front three or your front four and get there fast, you know, that disrupts pretty much every quarterback. But for Ryan, that's where his weakest point is, but it's also one of the most difficult things to do. So as a result of that, the way that you analyze that was great in terms of that you do have to mix things up. It also, you have to also understand as a defense, your strengths and weaknesses and what you can do and what you can't, and not try to do something that may hurt Ryan, but know that you're not going to be able to get the results to do it. And I think that there are a lot of teams that can't do that.
I pulled up his red zone for you over the last 3 years, 142 completions of 245 attempts. So his completion percentage is 58 or 58. It drops, which it does for most quarterbacks. Once the windows tighten in the red zone, your completion percentage is going to be lower than, you know, your normal completion percentage quite often. But 61 touchdowns and 4 picks in the red zone.
Okay. Okay, good. All right. Well, that's great. So then what I'm seeing are just isolated incidents at this point. So,
well, and it still could be true. It still could be true, right? That once he's asked to hold the ball longer, that may be an issue for him. It just looks like teams are struggling to make him do that.
Yeah. And I could imagine. So when you have Julio Jones and, you know, Mohamed Sanu and Calvin Ridley and two running backs that you can put pair up there along with Austin Hooper. So, yeah, speaking of which, you know, so what are your thoughts on Ryan's stats at this point?
Yeah, so right now I've got, you know, Matt Ryan at 575 attempts. I've got him at a 65% completion rate. So that's 374 completions. I have him at 8 yards per attempt. So that's 4,600 yards. Touchdowns per attempt, I've got him right at 5%. You know, that's a little on the conservative side. So again, this is my median, you know, projection. I think he has upside on touchdowns from there. Clearly, he displayed that 2 times out of the last 3 years. So I've got him at 29 touchdowns. But wouldn't be surprised of all if he's at 35, especially if Calvin Ridley takes a step forward. We know Mohamed Sanu and Hooper are going to do their, and Hooper's still emerging too. But if Calvin Ridley, you know, takes his game to another level from a consistency perspective, you know, there's a potential scenario where Matt Ryan throws 40 touchdowns. You know, I mean, I think it could happen. And he and Cotter have made music before in the passing game. So it's not like it'll be a totally a new thing. It'll be a little different than what he, than the way they were working that with Kyle Shanahan. But I expect Matt Ryan to be very comfortable in the offense. And I expect Cotter to completely play. He knows what Matt Ryan can do. I expect them to mesh very well. So I've also got him at 125 yards rushing and 1 touchdown there. So that final stat line is 4,600 yards passing, 29 passing touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 125 yards rushing with 1 touchdown.
Okay. So, you know, where I'm way off with you is basically in attempts. And I've met 628 attempts. And the reason I have them that high is that while Atlanta is trying to improve their defense and they want to be a ball hawking attacking defense, usually, you know, when a defense does that, and they have some players to do that, they, you know, they've got athletes on the corners, they've got athletes, you know, linebacker, they certainly have some athletes on the edge, you know, but they don't always have, they don't have a lot of disciplined guys. They are very prone to missing tackles in the open field, especially, you know, on plays to running backs and receivers in the flats. This is a team that I think when I hear defenses go that we're going to be ball hawking and attacking, that's usually that sometimes that works, but when it doesn't, it's like one step away from disaster and they give up tons yeah. of big plays and they end up not being a turnover generating defense. They tend to be a touchdown generating defense for the offense. And I can see that happening with Atlanta, and there's a cruel irony, and I'm just kind of, you know, there's no real connection with this, but I have the feeling I oftentimes you see like guys who are known for being offensive gurus or defensive gurus. And why did they fail as coaches? Because the very thing that they were brought in to do, that whoever they brought in couldn't do the job that they were so great or renowned for. You know, and Dan Quinn was a defensive guy. And I can just see the cruel irony once again happening here. So as a result, I have Ryan at 628 attempts, 415 completions at a 66% completion rate, 4,894 in terms of yardage, 7.79 yards per attempt. I've met a 5.3% touchdowns per attempt at 33 touchdowns and at 10 interceptions. And then I have 32 attempts, 130 rushing yards, and no touchdowns.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, your thoughts around him getting to that, you know, would you say you're like right around 625 attempts?
Yeah.
Yeah, that can happen. It really could. I mean, especially when we consider, we just talked about Dirk Cotter, right? And how often we have seen him pass the ball in the past. So basically I just kind of did the quick, you know, math here in my workbook. If they were to get to 63% pass, you know, based on, now again, this is assuming I've even got the plays right at 975, they could easily be at 1,000 plays, right? That's going to get them, you know, right around what you're talking about. So that could definitely happen. I don't think that's really a stretch. You're projecting more probably of the upside from an attempt standpoint versus the, yeah, where I have it at the median. But I think it's definitely, it's easily within the range of possibilities. It's not some sort of crazy stretch.
Okay. So how does that play out for our receivers here when we start looking at guys like, you know, if I were to set it up for you, I look at it this way. Julio Jones, obviously coming off a 1,600-yard season, still a dominant player when he's on the field, but it seems like it feels like every game he's on the bench or on the sideline standing around dealing with a bad foot or ankle issue that cost him like a series or two series or three series or a quarter. And then he comes back in and then like somehow still manages to get, you know, another 80 to 120 yards receiving in that game. And, you know, two and a half or 2.75 quarters of Julio Jones still seems to be enough for him to go over the 100 mark and score a couple touchdowns. But then you have Calvin Ridley, who, you know, we love the route running, the concentration drops he needs to cut those out. The drops after contact needs to drop some of those, cut some of those down a little bit too. But you know, really big explosive, you know, really explosive play threat and a little body and really skillful after the catch. They haven't really taken advantage of that as much as they could. And then you have Sanu, who, you know, is that guy that you hear about him every training camp about how good he is in training camp, and it never quite translates to the level that you would like to see. And he's one of those guys that I think he's one of those guys that, like, even within the next 1 to 3 years, whether he goes to another team or he stays with Atlanta and Julio Jones gets hurt for a year or Calvin Ridley gets hurt for a year, because those two guys are kind of, you know, your Formula One kind of sports cars are a little temperamental in terms of their bodies from what we've seen thus far. You know, Sanu could be that guy that suddenly we get like a 1,200-yard, 10-touchdown season out of him. And everybody's like, where did that come from? You know, and Atlanta fans will go, we've always seen it. And then they'll be upset that they didn't get it from him before. But he's not, I think he's more that player by necessity than he is by actual like talent versus relative to his peers. He's just a very good NFL receiver who's, you know, will get overshadowed by a lot of different players. And I think those are really the main three guys here. But a guy that, you know, just to talk about, not project, though I projected a couple of sums to these players, is I could see Justin Hardy, the Atlanta Falcons draft pick from a few years ago, getting cut this year. I could see, you know, they've talked about him having guys push him a little bit more. He's not much of a return specialist. He doesn't seem to get a lot of separation. They all talked about how his route running was great and he was going to become this stud slot receiver. I don't know. I never really saw it. I don't see it happening. Hasn't happened. The guys who are interesting are Russell Gage, who is a second-year player, and you can really see the burst and his ability to run routes. He's really improved as a route runner. He's made some nice plays after the catch. He's drawing interference penalties from defenders on a regular basis. I think he's a guy that if, you know, Calvin Ridley got hurt, Russell Gage might be a surprising player. He may not deliver anything near what Ridley did, but he could be a fantasy-worthy player for people off of a waiver wire that people want to keep an eye on. And one of my favorites from this draft in terms of just like guys who I thought might get drafted in the late rounds, who people were like, oh, he can't catch the ball, he's got a horrible drop problem. But every time I watched him, all I saw him do was make plays and do it well in difficult circumstances sometimes. And that was Olamide Zaccheaus out of Virginia. And he's making enough noise in camp that he's leading the preseason in receiving production. And he's making some really tough plays and running some nice routes. And he also can play special teams, so that if, you know, if they might keep him just because he has that edge in case Kenyon Barnard can't stay healthy. Zaccheaus was an excellent return specialist, a former scat back before he became a wide receiver, and I've just been impressed with his play. So those are the five guys that I'm interested in when it comes to the receiving core. Mainly, though, the big three are Jones, Ridley, and Sanu, and they're the ones we're going to project.
Yeah, I mean, this is really not, in my mind, one that's very hard to project, you know, just because it's pretty clearly set, right? You, Julio Jones, to your point, is the 1A and maybe even the 1B.
Right.
And then it's going to be, okay, who's going to get theirs afterwards?
He might be the one so, ABBA.
Yeah, exactly. And I am with you. And so I don't think it's completely just you, because I've owned Julio Jones so often through fantasy. You know, it is something that you pay attention when you see these guys. Like you said, he'll make a big play and a big run, and he's so forceful and so powerful. The path that defenders choose to take to tackle him is often bringing him down from behind, either because he gets past them, you know, he kind of tricks them with that deceptive, he's a big guy, but all of a sudden he's by you and now you're just clinging on. Or if you're a really small DB, you don't necessarily want to take Julio Jones on head first. So he's a guy that it reminds me of Terrell Owens. And if you remember, Terrell Owens is where the horse collar tackle came from. You know, that run after the catch ability is so strong, and he's so physically daunting, you know, when you're looking at him, you know, as a corner and even some safeties in the league. I think, you know, he gets tackled from behind at these weird angles a lot. You see it a lot with him. And so it's like these weird, and he's so powerful. It's like these, he gets contorted and his legs get bent in these weird ways. And I'm with you. I've noticed this over the last 2 or 3 years. And, you know, he'll come off for like 4 or 5 snaps and then he'll go back on the field, you know? Yeah. So I've definitely seen that. But I've got Julio Jones as the lead. I've projected Calvin Ridley to take a step past Mohamed Sanu to be the clear number two on the team. I've got Mohamed Sanu as the number 3 pass target. I've got Austin Hooper as the number 4. And then I've got Devonta Freeman at number 5. And I've got Ito Smith slightly ahead of Brian Hill as the 6th option. So for Julio Jones, it's 27% of the targets. That's 155 targets, 96 catches, 1,396 yards. And the crazy stat with Julio Jones every year, why does he not catch 10 or 12 touchdowns? You know, I've got him at 7.
Okay. Well, I'm pretty similar to you with everything except the Brian Hill, Ito Smith thing, which is fairly inconsequential compared to everything else. So, but I have the same order for 1 through 4. And I have Julio Jones at a higher target rate, but I also gave more attempts, but I have him at 170 targets, 93 receptions, 1,450 yards, slightly lower yards per catch average than last year, and 8 touchdowns, which I think I'm being optimistic on his touchdown rate, but I guess that's partly because I don't know. I'll reserve that for a little bit later when we talk about the tight ends. But I have that, and then when we look at, I'll start with Calvin Ridley. I've met 92 targets, 69 catches, 911 yards, and 9 touchdowns. I have him actually higher than Julio Jones, but I think a lot of that is, and I'll start it off this way, is that Julio Jones, from my experience, is if he has 2 weaknesses to his game, and listen, he's a freaking terminator of receivers. He's unbelievably good. So, you know, I'm not bashing Julio Jones. He's a fantastic player. But if I were to critique his game, because every player usually has some level of flaws, he's not really good at catching the ball when he sees the defender coming down at him and going to hit him. Like, if he gets hit in the back, it's not a big deal, you know. But if he can see the defender coming at him, you know, he gets visions of Brian Dawkins, like, dancing in his head, and he's not going to catch that ball. He's just not as good at that. He's inconsistent at that level. And the worst aspect of his game, I've never really seen him run a good fade route, corner fade route in the end zone. Like, he doesn't run red zone fades very well. It's like he's – I almost want to say he's borderline awful at it. In terms of, and you know, people will go, what are you talking about? That's crazy. And I go, well, let me point to the warm-up section of the games in the pregame when you watch him going up and skying for these balls and making these wonderful catches as if he's practicing red zone fades. And that's the only time you're going to see him do that, because Matt Ryan doesn't throw to him on those types of ball throws. And when they do, he doesn't seem to set up very well. He doesn't seem to be able to find a way to find that position well enough to get in bounds. The Eagles game, I've long argued last year to start, I think it was last year or the year before, the opener.
It was last year.
It was the opener. It was one of the last plays they threw to him, and that was on Jones. That was not a good route by Jones, and I haven't seen him really do that well. He's very good at those longer developing routes or physical routes. In a way where he can, you know, when he can run longer stems and set people up with longer stems, he's great with that. If he can play against off coverage and run, you know, slants, he's really good with that too. But you don't normally see him, when he's bumped in that tight situation, perform as well. And I don't think it's a weakness of Matt Ryan as much as it is a weakness of Jones. And it's fascinating because you would expect it to be much better. But I think one of the reasons his touchdown totals are low and it's not talked about a lot is that, you know, if he had Bill Parcells as a coach, Bill Parcells would probably say, why are we going to pay him? He can't catch the red zone fade route. You know, I mean, as a motivational ploy to get him to do this better. You know, you could see him do that, pull that kind of trick. But I think Jones is you know, certainly on his way to becoming a Hall of Fame receiver. But if you were going to ask me to pick a receiver to defend the planet, and you were going to, and your game plan was to throw fade routes, he might be on the bench.
Yeah, I'm it's funny, I don't scout as like you. I'm learning a lot of things, but you know, you'll hear me talk about the levels, right, and the application on the field for players. And in simple terms, I agree. The thing that I've noticed with Julio Jones is his ability, you know, and it's similar to fade routes, but his ability to win one-on-one situations deep, if he hasn't gotten past the player and he can bucket catch it, he's not as good as other players that are considered to be in his league.
Yeah.
Now you give him, you know, the deep end, you give him the slant route, you know, you give him the comeback, you throw him a go route and you get it past him. You run the skinny post. He's elite on all of those.
Oh yeah.
But so for me, he grades out as he's a four of five things I'm looking for, but he does those four. To your point, I don't want people, you know, people will probably get bashed on Twitter. These guys talk like 3 minutes about where Julio Jones can get better. They've lost their minds, and maybe they're right. But for me, with Julio Jones, it's that one component that's missing. He's really good at four out of five areas I love. And when I say really good, like he's as good as anyone at those four. So the number five thing doesn't show up that often because it's just hard. It's easy to overlook because he's so good at everything else. Honestly, you know who it reminds me of? It reminds me of Andre Johnson. Yes. Andre Johnson had a similar, very similar archetype type of player that won in very similar ways and played in the league a very long time at a very, was very good for a very long time. And he was similar in that way. So I've got Calvin Ridley, similar to you. I've got 104 targets. I've got him slightly higher in catches, 72. I think you said 69. Yeah. I've got him at 905 yards, and I've got him at 7 touchdowns. So I have him easy. I've got Mohamed Sanu. I'll go ahead and list off these last few guys, and then you can run through yours. I've got Mohamed Sanu at 15%. I'm like you on Sanu. Here's what I think about Sanu. I think Sanu is a nice player that is playing in the role he needs to play. You know, he's going to be a guy that's going to help you get some first downs. You know, he'll do some of the nitty gritty there. He's a good blocker. You know, he's a high effort player. So he's a good pro. He's limited, right? It's not like you can apply him to the field, you know, in a multitude of ways. You know, there's three or four things that he's really solid at, and he helps, and it helps stack up wins and create situations where you can now, he's good enough that it can help create better looks for other players, but he's not like the guy that you're going to, you know, centralize your offense around. So I still like him though, when I think of it from a perspective of Matt Ryan. You know, if you think about that rule of three, like the article that, you know, I put out for the RSP, he qualifies as being good enough to count towards the rule of three, right? Especially when your one is Julio Jones and you've got an ascending player like Calvin Ridley as your number two. So I've got Mohamed Sanu at 15% of the targets. So that's 86, you know, targets. I have him at the highest catch rate on the team because he works more of that underneath and intermediate stuff, and he gets a lot of looks from the slot. So that's 58 catches. I've got him at 665 yards. That's the lowest yards per catch I have on the team outside of, you know, at least for the receivers. So 665 yards, but I give him 6 touchdowns. You know, he's a solid weapon down around the red zone, you know, and quite often on this team, he can be the guy that ends up with the best matchup whenever they are in the red zone. So I think, you know, having Julio Jones and plus Calvin Ridley helps him there. As far as Austin Hooper goes, I've got him at 13% of the targets. I've got him at a 75% catch rate. You know, 10 yards per catch. So you can kind of see the way this offense works. Julio can basically do most everything, but he's going to probably have the highest average depth of target. Then Calvin Ridley's going to be right under him. then Mohamed Sanu and Hooper are more working that, you know, intermediate and short areas of the field. So Hooper, I've got, like I said, 10 yards per catch. That's 560 yards. I've got him at 4 touchdowns. And then we already talked about Freeman earlier, and Ito Smith and Brian Hill, like you said, I've, you know, I have them a little bit, you know, different than you, but I won't, they're more kind of picking up the scraps.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah. So, I mean, Sanu, I have at 94 targets, 66 catches, 806 yards, a little higher in terms of yards per catch than you. And I have him at 4 touchdowns, a little bit less.
How many targets again for Sanu versus
94
Ridley
to 92. So I have okay. Ridley with a higher catch percentage. And I guess that's because I don't know why I have that way. Probably the best that I can say is that I'm anticipating Ridley to just improve his catch percentage and maybe catch some of the, he had some awful drops last year, and they were just like, they were drops that he should have been able to make a better play on, to the point that when I actually commented on it on Twitter on video, he like responded back and a whole bunch of Falcons fans were like, yeah, I do expect Ridley just to do a better job, because rookies generally drop the ball a little more when they're overthinking things. So I had a little bit of higher catch rate there. And that's really more what it was. Hooper, I have at 88 targets, 71 catches, 660 yards at about a little over 9 yards per catch. And I'm trying to be optimistic, because this is me probably more banging my head against the wall than it is about looking at the trends here. But I'll give you the pros and cons of it. If I'm looking outside of Dirk Koetter, not thinking about Dirk Koetter, this would be me being, you know, butting my head against the wall saying, Matt Ryan, why aren't you throwing to a guy who actually can run the fade, win the ball over people, and you've done it a little bit with him, but then keep going back to it. Like, what's your problem? Get on the same page with Hooper, because this guy, he may not be a stud athlete in terms of like speed, but he's a stud athlete in terms of above the rim fluidity that they have not taken advantage of. It's like Alex Smith, who refused to throw fade routes to Travis Kelce or go up and win it routes to Travis Kelce. It's like, you've got to be kidding me. So, but the thing is one of the things that Dirk Koetter is good at, and we haven't really talked about a lot, is how efficient he is with, or how he's very good at making tight ends very efficient in the red zone. Like, you watch Cameron Brate, you watched, you know, OJ Howard. I think that he's good at being able to get the tight end play, and they've talked about making the emphasis of the tight end play being a bigger thing here. So I'm being optimistic that Matt Ryan and Hooper are finally going to get on the same page in the red zone, and they're not just going to throw these Sarkisian flat routes like at the 7 and he gets to the 3. They're gonna throw, you know, routes where his depth of target leads him into the end zone, actually, as opposed to outside of it, because Hooper can make the first man miss, and he does break the first tackle a lot, but you know, again, he wins the ball above the rim, and that's an untapped facet of his game that hopefully they will take advantage of. And if they do, Matt Ryan and Austin Cooper have hidden upside in that level.
Well, if they do that, Matt, I'm going to be mad. I traded the guy away in both dynasty leagues. So anyway,
well, Steve Volk, if you're listening, but yeah, I'll have won my bet with you with Hunter Henry at that point, but probably.
I do agree with you. And if you think about some of the limitations of Julio Jones, it would make sense. And to be able to do more of that with Hooper, yeah. Right? And to be able to, you know, obviously Sanu is a nice weapon there as well. So, I mean, again, pointing back to Matt Ryan, it's kind of hard to see a scenario where Matt Ryan doesn't have a really solid season. You know, it would have to do with the offensive line drastically underperforming.
Awesome. Well, you know, this has been an excellent conversation. And for those of you Falcons fans who may have been pointed to our podcast for the first time, and you seem a little butthurt about us talking about Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley in not always glorious ways, please understand that we're a scouting-oriented podcast. So we're going to talk about the strengths and the flaws of players, even great players, and that we're doing that from an educational standpoint. It's not just a strictly fantasy show. It's not just a strictly, you know, version of Entertainment Tonight for football people. We're really talking. Sometimes we want to get in depth about talking about players, even great ones, and where they can be flawed, because that's educational for when you're scouting great talent. And that way that when you understand that you're looking at the next stud receiver in the college game, that even they have some flaws. But one person who, you know, I'll tell you that, you know, when it comes to their data game, I won't say he's flawless, but we're certainly very happy to have him on here, is obviously Dwayne. And on behalf of Dwayne and I, we want to thank you for checking out this RSP cast. You can check out further ones at various outlets like iTunes and Google Play and Spotify, Podbean, Stitcher, there's pretty much everywhere you can find it there. And you can find our work at mattwaldmanrsp.com, and also Dwayne, follow him on Twitter at Dwayne McFarlane. You can also follow me at Twitter at Matt Waldman, and we will be back with another episode
covering the New Orleans Saints coming up soon. Covering the New Orleans Saints coming up soon.